Hello and welcome to the Liverpool Connection podcast. I'm Daz, I've got Steve with me, and I've got from Red Men TV, Chris. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm very good personally and obviously in a Liverpool football sense because we've literally had the best week ever, haven't we?
We have. Well, first I want to ask you, we normally ask our guests, like, what does Liverpool Football Club mean to you? And then what was your first Anfield experience?
Yeah, so I think what it means to me, my words, as it is with most Liverpool fans, because we're all wired a certain way, it's just a huge part of your life and who I am as a person, I suppose. And, you know, from my earliest memories, I just remember being obsessed with football, you know, and I was drawing kits with my mates, like collecting like match cards and shoot magazines and everything, and just being obsessed with Ian Rush and Kenny Dalglish and John Barnes and stuff. And then obviously as I've gotten older, it's become even more a part of my life, to the point where now my inverted commas job is talking about Liverpool Football Club. It's not a job, it's something that me and Paul do as a hobby that turned into how we feed our family, fortunately enough. So it's now more than ever, it's been incredible. You know, we're on the back of being champions of everything not so long ago, but still Premier League and world champions. And it's just given me some of the best moments of my life, this football club. And I'll forever be thankful for that.
And your first Anfield experience?
So I remember it being a draw. I think, now most people know the answers to this question off the top of their head, but I'm pretty certain mine was a draw with one of the Bristol clubs, City or Rovers, in the early 90s in a cup competition. And I think I've got a feeling it was like 2-2 or we won it 2-1, something like that. My memory is atrocious for these types of things. So, and then I reckon I was probably 10 at the time. But before that, I remember my dad going to the FA Cup final in 89, and that was my first sort of memory of how big and important it all was and stuff like that. Obviously off the back of Hillsborough and then going and winning that FA Cup and my dad being there and all that, and then obviously that's just got bigger and bigger. And then I started going to the game with my mates, you know, when I was like 13, 14 years old, and that's when I have most of my memories, is going not just with my dad earlier on, but also with the lads that I grew up with. And then I remember the last game of the Cop against Norwich, where Jeremy Gosse scored and stuff like that, and being stood on the Cop for the last stand. It was also my first stand on the Cop as well. So, yeah, but it seems like a very long time ago now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but I think the best part was just like, you know, well, the match itself, but just, you know, the whole day of just, you know, getting with your mates, walking up to Anfield. You know, this is before, like, you get in the pub and have a pint. You know, I remember, because I'm from Formby, you know, getting off at Sandhills and having that long walk up. But, you know, you'd just be chatting with your mates all the time, dead excited. So, yeah, it's just an experience that, you know, sadly, a lot of people won't be able to, you know, do.
Yeah, certainly this year, yeah. Our one was, we always used to park at Georgeson's garage because they were family friends of ours. So we used to park on the forecourt of Georgeson's, and then you'd get to go to the pub with your dad, wouldn't you? So we'd go over to the official supporters club just over the road, and I'd sit there with a bottle of Coke and with a straw in it and a packet of crisps while my dad and his mates are all having a beer. And then remember thinking it was like a 45-minute walk. It seemed like the longest walk ever up to Anfield. It's about 600 metres. But I remember in my head that was the longest walk ever, and we were so far away. Just a special time, like, and you know, to be able to do that with your family and stuff as well, and then your mates. And you know, I mean, I know Steve travels over for games, and it's just as special. Like, we're lucky because we lived on the doorstep, and I live on the doorstep now, but you know, massive respect to anyone who makes it over and does it, because it will always live long in the memory.
Steve.
Hey, Chris, good morning. It's always great to see you. I mean, for those that don't know, you know, you and I, we met each other first in 2016, and we had some bevies together in San Francisco, and then we met up for last year in Boston. And for what I remember, we had a great time.
Yeah, same, mate. Absolutely. I remember the San Francisco one more than the Boston one.
And the Boston one, when we ended up at the pub with Mel Reddy and the lads from Anfield Rap, and we took over that pub, yeah. Luckily, there's only a few pictures from that night and not all the crazy ones. But I wanted to tell a story because I actually met you in 2016 in Liverpool. I was fortunate enough to play in a Legends game, you know, be supporters. And I remember that you also played in that game, but you played on the Legends side. And I remember seeing you, and I didn't really know you then, right? And so I saw you, and even for an Englishman, your skin was white. I mean, I was like, man, who is this guy? This is the whitest skin I've ever seen. And then you had the cameras around you. And I was like, are they filming a special, like a Make-A-Wish Foundation, kind of like this is his last, you know, like his dying wish to play with Liverpool, right? I was like, what the hell is this hat? And then you started playing, and I was thinking, you know, he's doing pretty good for being terminally ill. And I just remember that. And then after that, I found out, like, oh, it's written on TV. And I was just embarrassed that I even thought of it like that. But it's been fun. And, you know, I've had such great memories. But I wanted to tell you that story. I've never told you that story. But
that's brilliant, mate. Brilliant. I mean, I've got pale skin. Don't get me wrong. It's the Polish heritage, I think, more than anything. Like, and certainly I've got white legs. They don't often see the sunshine, or they never used to anyway. But I remember that game because I turned up and I was supposed to be on the supporters' side, and they basically didn't have a spot for me. So I got lashed on the Legends team, and they didn't play me. I didn't come on until about 75 minutes. Right. But me and Paul were messing around doing sort of filming and all that type of stuff, and they brought me on. And David Thompson just played this ball to me like I was a professional footballer, like I was a legend. And he hit it so hard and I miscontrolled it. The ball must have bounced off my foot, about 10 yards off my foot. And they ignored me for the rest of the game. He flat out refused to pass the ball to me. Like, I was just like, oh, great. You've smashed the ball at me. And now you won't even let me play with the good kids. It was just so disappointing.
Trust me, there's players on our team I didn't want to pass it to either, but, you know, that's another story. But, you know, going back to that day, even you being, you know, around the club so much, that had been such a great feeling to be around some of those legends that you had seen playing as you were growing up.
They were heroes of mine, absolute heroes. I mean, you know, I remember watching on telly when John Aldridge threw his boots in as he was leaving the football club. But, you know, when I was about, I would have been 11 years old, Robbie Fowler was breaking through into the first team, and I got to share a football field with Robbie Fowler and Jamie Carragher, two of my absolute favourite footballers ever from any era. And it's just so surreal, and doing Red Men has enabled us to do these mad things that you never would have dreamed were possible. And so it's just an honour, to be honest with you. And, you know, you don't take it for granted, and you can't ever take something like that for granted. You know, quite often, Steve, I think about that day and how lucky I was to play with some of the people who were genuine heroes of mine, and, you know, getting to know the likes of Robbie and Jamie a bit more. You know, I've seen them a lot over the years, and realising that they're not only good footballers, but I was right to, you know, absolutely adore them, because what they do for the communities in and around Liverpool is just second to none. So they're good people, which is, I think, more important than being good footballers, and getting to see that side of them is just, we're just so lucky to be able to do that.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we've really tried to do here in Austin, you know, being the president of the Supporters Club, kind of continuing the tradition. We've been able to bring over 9 legends to our pub to speak and to bring some of that history. Because as we alluded to before, not everybody's going to be able to make it to Liverpool, right? And so that's so important to bring that history over here. And then when during the summers when Liverpool plays, you know, you saw the just how the fans are in the United States. You know, whenever Liverpool plays, you know, you've been able to go to a couple of the preseason stuff. And so, you know, the level of passion that we have here for the club, you know, and a lot of them, you know, aren't going to make it to Liverpool, but you can kind of tell that they're living vicariously through you, the Anfield Rap guys, you know, kind of regular people that started these ventures and now are really ubiquitous with the club. I saw a video with you and Paul out talking about just how Red Men originated, you know, that it wasn't you didn't really think it was going to end up being this type of thing now that you have it, but it was kind of really just, you know, making some videos at the beginning. Can you kind of share some of that history with us?
Yeah, sure. So we started, I think Paul and Aubrey, who used to do Redmen with us, started it. They came up with the idea in about 2007. Me and Paul have been best mates for years and years, and Paul wanted to do it with me, and we just started. We wanted to sort of have a little bit of a reverent look at the football club, because we're those type of people. We like to laugh and joke and all that type of stuff. Not saying we're funny, but we like to laugh and joke. And then it was just a light-hearted take on football, a la, you know, Wayne's World, a little bit like that, but also just talking about what we're passionate about. So we started it off, and it was a comedy sketch show to begin with, believe it or not, and it was atrocious. And I cringed watching these videos back, and we used to script them and all that type of stuff. And then we realised, you know, what the viewer wants is, and we kind of like doing what people, getting the feedback from people, you sort of feed on it, and then the show changed, and it is what it's become over the last few years and stuff. So there was never really a plan. It was just something that we did for fun, the same way that you start a podcast up now. It's exactly the same thing. We just started it, and we're still doing it now. There was no grand plan of what we would ever see it being or anything. We just wanted to have fun and talk about footy, and that's what we're still doing to this day. And I think if we're not, then we won't be doing it anymore, I suppose.
Well, you could make a show of just having your interviews after a match, you know, 10, 10, everybody gets a 10, right?
Well, yeah, that's it, isn't it? I mean, I love all that stuff, because obviously you can have, you know, not many people get tens in football matches, because you have to do everything perfectly, but it's the emotion of the game, isn't it? It's what we love about it. It's a narrative that we get sucked into, and, you know, you enjoy it. And I feed off that. Like, I love doing those player ratings outside the ground when there's people around me, and I get to talk to other people and hear their opinions as well, because you learn off other people, don't you, all the time, people that you speak to, and, you know, yourself, Steve, you, Dazza, you'll have a different viewpoint of the football than I will. You know, you'll when I'm watching the football, I probably don't watch the ball all the time. I'll maybe watch the defence for a little bit, or maybe I just, you know, Tsimikas is starting, let's say, and I'll just thought, oh, do you know what, I'll just watch Tsimikas for 15 minutes and see his position and all that type of stuff, whereas you guys have probably got a more fuller view. You've got the whole pitch in front of you, you've got commentators explaining things, replays, all that type of stuff. So there's always going to be talking points from these different views, and it's about expanding those views and seeing what you can learn about, and, you know, not just dismissing somebody because they weren't in the grounds, you know, or because I've seen that labelled at fans from around the club. But as you said, Steve, I've been away to all over the world following Liverpool Football Club. And I'm not just saying this because I'm on an American podcast, but they are some of the most passionate people about football I've ever met. You know, it the level of dedication that it takes to essentially ruin your fucking week by staying up till stupid o'clock in the morning to watch a football game in the pub, never mind even at home, just setting the alarm and turning it over and putting it on. You guys go to the pub to watch it and then go straight to work. I mean, it's just another level of dedication that I massively respect. I think it's incredible. Flip side, I'm an American football fan, and I stay up all night watching American football, and I would hate to think that someone thinks less of me when I dedicate so much of my time to watching a sport that doesn't happen in my country and follow a team that I'm nowhere near. I'd be a hypocrite if I ever thought the reverse of that, because it's a sport. We love it. It's the stories. And what I think is different, because I've met fans of other clubs from all around the world, there's something special about Liverpool. It draws us, there's a certain type of person that are drawn into the club, and maybe a bit more the people of Liverpool. So many people I've met over the years who give to fan support and food banks, they're on the other side of the world, but they're giving to these charities that are close to our heart. And that's incredible. Like, and they throw themselves into the culture just as much as their fandom of the sports team, as it were. And that's the thing that I don't think other people get, is that these fans from around the world are living the culture of Liverpool, the city and the team. And that's incredible to think of.
Yeah, that's what we try and tell, you know, people that over here is like, don't just go to a footy match. Go, you know, city centre. Go to Bold Street. Go to, you know, everywhere you can to get the culture at Liverpool rather than just, you know, the one day out for the footy match. So, yeah, I mean, Liverpool itself is just, you know, as we all know, is just an amazing city with amazing people. You know, from the amount of people that we've had, you know, on the podcast, Peter Hooton, Peter Carney, you know, I'm sure you're the same, Chris. It's still like when you interview these people, you just get this, like, you know, flutter, butterflies. You're just like, you know, I'm interviewing somebody that loves Liverpool Football Club just as much as the city as well. So it's just like a really great feeling, you know. It must be amazing, yeah, absolutely, to, you know, to be able to get up like you do and you just talk about Liverpool constantly.
It is. It's incredible. It's like, what are we going to do today? Oh, we're going to talk about footy. I used to work in restaurants, mate, and you know, you'd have those days. I enjoyed it. I was quite good at it as well. But you'd have those days where you see the sunshine, you think, oh man, we're going to be slammed today. It's going to be a hell of a shift. You just don't get that now. Those days are now, oh, it's a Champions League semi-final today. Are you coming for this one? Like, let's go, man. I mean, come on. I mean, most people kill to be able to go to the footy and talk about the footy and all that type of stuff. It's why we're dead lucky. And couple that with the fact that we've got the best team in the world as well, the best manager in the world, some of the best players in the world. God, it's an absolute dream come true. It really is.
And now we've gone Thiago.
The lad is... Well, we've never signed a world-class player, have we? I mean, I don't remember a time when we've ever signed a universally accepted world-class footballer. We've had people who are close. You know, Alisson was playing. He had one of the all-time great seasons at Roma, but he'd only done a season at the top level. You know, Virgil van Dijk was still playing at Southampton. Still, people were saying that's too much money. Now we ripped Southampton off. Torres, he was one that was there for the future, but he wasn't world-class at the time when we signed him from Atletico. Luis Suarez, no one had heard of. Go back further. If anyone can name me a world-class player that Liverpool signed, tell me, because I don't know. We've broken the mould. It's a statement signing. And he comes in and makes a statement himself on 45 minutes against Chelsea. Gets the record for most passes in 45 minutes by any player since Opta started their stats in bloody 2003 by having 75 passes. Like 32 of 39 of these passes are in the attacking third. I mean, the lad comes on and makes everyone better. And this is a side where you look at it and you go, wow, we've got, you know, 29 million quid. That was the cheapest way Liverpool could have actually made their team any better than it is. To replace a better front three player, if there are any out there, circa 100 million plus. To replace a defender, circa, I don't, maybe it's Joe Gomez, who knows, 80 million for Koulibaly, something like that. We did it for 29 million and we got him on bloody finance. Like, we were only paying 5 million up front or something. We're going to spread the cost. Like, I'm buying a sofa. You know what I mean? We've got a world-class player in now who comes in and basically, Jürgen said after the game yesterday, didn't he? We didn't really talk to him. He just went on and did what he wanted. And everyone in the team, world champions, are going, here goes Thiago. The ball, mate. Yeah, I take the ball, do something with the ball. Everyone's like, oh God, he's good, isn't he? Can you believe we got this lad for basically 5 million quid over a few years? I mean, just incredible to watch. He really is.
I don't even think he got out of first gear yesterday either. He's just kind of, you know, jogging around. But you could already tell, because, you know, we talked about how long it takes to get embedded into Klopp's teams, right? You know, Fabinho and Rabo and even Keita, like how long it's taken them to. It looked like he had been there forever. Just the players had confidence in him. He wanted the ball. He was in his positional awareness was, that was something that I was really focused on. But he was always there for the triangle. And it was a joy to watch. It's like, man, wait till he's actually trained more than half a session with the team.
It's scary. I mean, I as a player I've liked for a long time, as a lot of people will, he's, you know, one of the world-class players, isn't he, in football? But the thing that's always stood out for me, and it's what you're referencing there, Steve, is that he's always in space. And he's constantly in motion to find space, and he's always available for a pass. Now, as quick of thought as he is, as quick footed as he is, that ability to find space in one of the most cramped areas of the pitch is what I think separates him from great players. I think he's better than that. And that's the thing that I always look for with him, how he finds that space in a packed midfield and is always available for the pass. That's what Liverpool needs. And the bravery and possession. He's not just playing the simple ball, he's playing balls. Paul noticed it yesterday. He played a ball blind around the corner to Robbo and screamed at and for not pushing up and saying to 10, you should have been an option down there. It's his first game. And he, 15 minutes in, he's telling the best right back in the world while playing a blind pass that he should have been somewhere else. And he's playing these passes. And someone said it to me before, I'm going to nick the point. He plays them with instruction. He plays them in front of the players to say, this is what you do next. Because I've not only seen the pass, I also know where you need to go. So go over there and do that for me. I'm going to find some space. He's an absolute joy to watch. He really is.
Yeah, I was too busy just looking at his eyes.
to notice any of this
yeah,
stuff.
I was just mesmerised by the colour of his eyes. So, yeah, I didn't watch much of the football. But
You keep talking like that, Dazza.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I'm not used to talking to Chris without a bevy in my hand. I got coffee today, right? So I might. You keep talking that kind of stuff, I might have to go pop up with a beer here in a second.
Well, I'm glad it was just pop open a beer.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's right.
But how good is Michael Edwards as well? He's like a ninja. He just comes at night and he raids your club. Like, he needs a statue.
Yeah, maybe we're just putting a statue of a laptop up or something like that. Who knows? But I don't know how he does it, to be honest with you. Like, we were talking about the Jota deal as well. I'm sure we'll talk about him a little bit later and stuff or whatever. But, like, if I was Wolves, I'd be like, Liverpool want him? No. Just because, like, do any of you play like the NFL fantasy footy or anything like that? And like, someone comes in with a trade, and my first reaction is, why do you want my player? Is he going to be dead good? Do you know something that I don't know about this fella? Do you know what I mean? And then that's what Liverpool come in for Jota, and I'd be like, I know he's not playing, but if Liverpool want him, Liverpool very rarely get it wrong in the transfer market. Maybe we should keep hold of Jota. And hang on a minute. Oh, you're selling us Keanu Hoover? Why are you selling him? Because you really like good players. And I'd be a little bit, I'd just be like, right. Every time he comes in for a meal, if it is me, a player, I'd be like, no, I'm not selling him. Not if you want him, no way, because he's going to be a world star soon.
Yeah, but you're not only that, but to also acquiesce to the terms, right? You know, Bayern's like, okay, you're going to rent this player for 5 years or 4 years. We're going to pay you. I'm like, how's that happen? And then also with Wolves, okay, pay us this much up front, pay us in 12 months the rest. I'm like, how does he get it? You know, I don't understand it, but it's great that, you know, Edwards is pulling the strings that he's able to finance that. Yeah. But I mean, I think it goes back to these times that we're in require creative financing. And I think it gets lost on a lot of the supporters that you can't just go spend, you know, $100 million. It has to be structured where you're not putting your team in any kind of negative situation in 6 months, because who knows where we're going to be in 6 months, right?
Yeah, I just don't see any other team doing what Michael Edwards does. They seem to have, you know, like the Werner deal for Chelsea, they had to pay the full-on clause. You know, I guarantee, like, Edwards would have paid him like a pound.
Yeah.
So let's move on. He's just amazing. Fair play to Nuno, you know, for letting Liverpool get Jota. And fair play for saying, like, he deserves to be at a team like Liverpool. I mean, what manager from another team says, yeah, just take him, make him better, he deserves it? I've never really heard that before.
No, and now it's bizarre, isn't it? But then, like, the older I've got, the more I realise that, you know, footy's not about the transfers at all. I mean, the transfers are sexy and the transfers are fun to talk about and all that type of stuff. And it's great to get excited about them. But moreover, football is about the relationships of the players with the manager and the manager and the club and all that type of stuff. So what works out for one player at one club, it doesn't mean he's a bad player if it doesn't work out somewhere else, but the situation's not right. Now, I think that's what it is with Nuno Espirito Santo. He looks at it and goes, I know that he'd suit Liverpool's system probably better than ours. So fair play. I understand why they want him. And I think a proper football man like Nuno, like Jürgen, they understand that. In the same way that, look, right now when we're recording this, it looks like Brewster might go or something like that. It's not to say that he's a bad player. It's just more that he doesn't fit our system. And now Brewster might go on to become that generational talent that we all think he's going to be and score 30 goals a season. But would he be able to do that and achieve that at Liverpool Football Club? Because that number nine role that we have isn't what works. Like, the best example of this is like Sergio Aguero, one of my favourite strikers from the last 10 years. I think he's absolutely incredible. He'd be a terrible number nine for us. because we don't play with that. So Jota might suit our system, and he's got all the analytics behind him, and Edwards and Spearman and everyone in that team know that he's going to fit in well. He's got the capacity to do those high intensity sprints and all that type of stuff, and it'll work out, I think. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he can play in a Wolves system that plays three at the back. He maybe is just more of a bit part player there. So that's why I think there's an understanding that Liverpool's system and Jota go hand in hand together.
Do you think we'll go in for another centre-back? Or, you know, now we've got Thiago for midfield, you know. Like, Fabinho, again, looked like he played centre-back for the last five seasons. So what's your take on that?
Well, I think the funny thing about it is Klopp's been telling us for a year Fabinho's an option at centre-half, and yet we somehow want to believe everything he says and ignore the things that we don't like. Now, he's told us Fabinho's an option at centre-half, and yet we're all shocked because it's Chelsea away and Timo Werner's playing and Kai Havertz. And again, go back to transfers being the sexy thing. They're not a team. They're not a team like Liverpool or a team. We saw that yesterday. They're nowhere near the finished article. It was good to get Chelsea this early. Come the end of the season, you probably won't want to play Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, so I'm glad that we've got that one boxed off. But Fabinho at centre-half, he's got all the attributes to play that centre-half position. He's tall, he's strong, he's a brilliant tackler. He reads the game so well. His passing's better than Matip and Gomez, so maybe he's a better option with the ball at his feet, because quite often they pressurise Van Dijk, and it means that the other person's the lad who has to build out from the back. You put Fabinho there, you can understand already you've upgraded that type of thing as well. So maybe he is an option. Maybe. I don't know is the honest answer. I would have liked us to sign another player, but who'd you sign? Who'd you sign to come and be our 4-3 centre-half who's good enough? I don't know. And we know Klopp likes a small squad. Fabinho's proved himself a versatile player. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on it, to be honest.
Well, I mean, it's a tough one because, you know, it just seems like Matip is constantly injured. You know, he's injured again. And Gomez now, you know, with that muscle strain. It's like, can you really rely on those two for the entire season? You know, I mean, there was talk about the Schalke lad, the 20-year-old, you know. But then that was funny because the day before, Bayern Munich put 8 past him. So you're like, ooh, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, if like Gomez and Matip can actually get through like a season, you know, then I don't think we need a fourth, you know.
You know, we've always been fortunate. They've never been hurt at the same time. You know, look back last season, they kind of took turns, right? And then we had Lovren was also injured, but they were all never injured at the same time. So we're very fortunate. And
yeah,
I don't know if you'd want Fabinho to play the whole season back there. You know, Man City did it with Fernandinho last year, but, you know, that wasn't their best. But they didn't have a covering defensive mid for him when they took him out. Where we do, we have options at the defensive mid position, you know, with Thiago and Henderson, and, you know, Wijnaldum could play there if he wanted to. Or, you know, so it's a different aspect, and goes back to, you know, we have a squad. We don't have just individual players, you know, and you're bringing them from different systems. We have players that are in a system, and, you know, I don't know why we always, not Daz and I, because, you know, we kind of see the bigger picture, but, you know, there are a lot of people that will just say, pick this player. Like, oh, their Klopp has built a system, but over 5 years, you know, you just don't pluck somebody in and put them in there. And if they're not going to be the best solution, and why spend money frivolously? Cause you know, FSG is not going to do that anyway at this point. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I don't understand about some fans. You know, we hate the FSG, you know, brigade out brigade. Just because I just don't understand. You know, FSG have done the same business for the last 10 years. Nothing's going to change. They're going to do the business the way they do it. We're not going to get, you know, like everybody was going, we need to get Havertz. We need to get him. But why? Why do we need to get him? Why do we need to spend that amount of money? I mean, you saw the gulf in difference yesterday. Chelsea are just, to me, like a team of mercenaries right now. You know, they've not gelled. Well, you look at Liverpool and we just look class again. So
yeah, and that's right. And but this is the people always need something to vent on, don't they? Liverpool fans have always had a scapegoat, whether that be Lucas when he signed because people didn't like his hair, or whether it's Dejan Lovren, who probably didn't make a mistake for his last year and a half at the club, but still never really got over. You know, it was Karius, it was Mignolet. There's always something. And when you're world champions, Premier League champions, and a year removed from being European champions, you've got to moan at something. So then why not go to them? Why not? That's what they've done. They've just gone back to the owners. We need to capitalise. I get it. We need to strengthen from a position of strength. But if they're telling us that the financial situation is not right, I would much rather a club be here come the end of this COVID-19 pandemic than not be here. Because we were all Liverpool fans in 2010 when they nearly went out of business, or 2009, whatever it was. And that's something that I could never face up to. So, look, Liverpool clearly have now managed to structure two deals such that they can afford it over this year. They're not putting the club in financial distress over the next year when everything's still in flux with COVID-19 and the commercial money's coming in. But we already had the best side in the world. And this is the other thing as well. People think transfers are the be-all and end-all of football. Football is the games on the pitch. That's football. That's the real tangible thing that you should get your enjoyment out of. Celebrate your wins. The losses hurt. Do whatever with the draws. Put them in a bin. Do whatever. But know that that's why we follow football, because it's the game that we love. All the other stuff is just like a fucking... it's ancillary. We don't need any of it. The enjoyment comes from watching the lads play, and each and every week these lads are proving without a shadow of a doubt that they know how to play football, they know how to win games, they know how to put trophies onto the sideboard, and that's the most important thing for me.
Yeah, we mentioned that last year during the title run. Is like we had some friends that I'm not gonna watch it, you know, we've been in this position before. Why not watch it? Why not, you know, be part of the journey, whether it ends up with a trophy or not? You know, even when we lost to Real Madrid, the journey was fun all the way up to that point. You know, you get over it and then you use it as a stepping stone for the future. But like, it's not just about the result. It's about the friendships you make,
yes,
the people that you meet, you know, the experience of match day and traveling, you know, when you being over there in Liverpool, obviously being able to travel to matches or go and have a pint at an away ground, you know, so that we're very social creatures, Daz and I, you know, we want to bring all this together. It's like, okay, I don't understand. Just watching the game and then being negative about every other aspect of it doesn't make sense to me, because there's so many positive things about this. And speaking of that, Chris, I wanted to, you know, there have been so many great experiences and successes here in the last, you know, 14 months or so. Can you kind of give us a few of your favorite moments? I'm sure Barcelona game might be one of them.
Corner taken quickly, 100%, by far and away, the greatest Anfield night of my entire life. It was just incredible. But, you know, I mean, on a personal level, I got to interview Jürgen last summer in Boston.
Right.
I mean, that was just something else. And more recently, we got to sit down with Peter Moore last week. So that's not quite out on the Red Med yet. But he spent an hour and 45 minutes with us, saw him on football. And there's a fan, you know what I mean, first and foremost of Liverpool. And, you know, he was lucky enough to go and do his dream job, essentially, and run Liverpool Football Club and stuff. And he was such an interesting bloke. But on the pitch, the Barcelona one, for me, Bayern Munich away, going there, going and seeing a proper side and a proper club in Bayern Munich, and the way that they ran that away game. Because you go to summer, remember Roma the year before, and it was dodgy. You know, you're getting buses and you're getting shoved onto buses by the police and queuing for 2 hours outside the ground. Bayern Munich was just ran with ruthless German efficiency. It was just, everyone's in a nice line, here's where you go. It was just a lovely, wonderful experience of an away game. But, you know, I loved Roma for the different aspects of it. You know, that, like, do you remember when this happened? And you got those stories. It's exactly what you're talking about, Steve, going the game, isn't it? You got those stories to tell that you look back on. One of my favourite games was, like, Derby in the Cup about 5 or 6 years ago. We played them, we won 3-0. It's one of the best atmospheres of an away end I've ever been in. No one else remembers the bloody game, but if you were there, you remember how great. And you know, these are the things that you look back, and it's not just the great results, but it's those things that have happened along the way. Being there in Porto a few years ago when LA got sang on the train for the first time, and you know, the lads who wrote it, we recorded them as they were singing it, walking down the street, jumped on the train, and then seeing amazing what happens to that song as it reverberates around the globe, you know, and Jamie Webster takes it to a whole new level, and seeing the cultural side of Liverpool come out again alongside the team. And, you know, another one, obviously it was in a really bad situation, but back to Rome, actually, when Jordan Henderson brought the Sean Cox banner out in the Champions League semi-final, that was a really touching moment for me. You know, obviously we were all devastated to what happened to Sean and all that type of stuff, obviously, but seeing the captain of the football club, the club that you love, asked to take that banner over and display it in a show of solidarity, when you realise that these lads are great lads, they're not just a great team, they're more than that, and seeing what Henderson did for the NHS as well, raising all that money, and there's just so many highlights, Steve. There's just too many to mention them all, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Germany. I lived in Germany for 3 years, so I can attest to your the way they're so, the precision. You can almost, I remember like at halftime, you can almost have a Sunday roast. They're so structured and efficient, you know, during halftime. You can have, and you can get in for your pint and a meal, and you're already back in your seat. Like, how do you do this? But yeah, we had Peter Moore straight from that Bayern Munich game, and they flew straight to Austin, had him in our pub. They hadn't even slept. He and Debbie, you know, you could just tell they're dead on their feet. But Peter had his PowerPoint and going over just what the future goals of the team on social media, you know.
Two nights previous to that, I was at the one that Peter Moore did in Bayern. In Munich, sorry, not Bayern. So I'll have seen the exact same presentation. And this is something I said to him last week, actually. See, I said, why don't you do this stuff for people in Liverpool? And he said, honest answer, no one's ever asked me. I said, that made me feel so much closer to the football club for having seen that presentation. And, you know, a lot of it's branding and it's but I think a lot of it, it's born out of the truth, like that what's the club line that they used to use? Local heartbeat, global pulse. Like, I totally get that. It's what we were talking about at the top of the show, isn't it? It's, you know, but I thought that Peter Moore was genuinely fascinating, and I wish they did more of that for people in and around Liverpool, because I think they'd probably feel better about the football club, to be honest.
Yeah, I remember us sitting at the pub and watching this PowerPoint, and you're just amazed. I mean, you're already in love with the club, but then you're like seeing just their plan to reach even more people, to bring more focus into some of the charitable foundations that they're involved in. And you're like, okay, this is just not the first 11. It's about the community as a whole, and that they're really passionate about, you know, expanding the fan base around the world, you know, into Africa and in the Asian countries and things like that. So yeah, it's amazing, Chris, just the whole atmosphere.
I mean, I went and again, I was lucky enough in Boston. I was just Googling the name of it because I forget. But Liverpool and Peter Moore was there. Billy Hogan was there. And they were looking at a vet centre, so a veterans of war centre in Boston. And they were going in, and Peter is so empathetic. And, you know, he's got so much empathy, and he's there, and we're asking questions, and we've gotten shown around this veteran centre and talking to some guys who've been through some hell of some stuff for obviously fighting in the wars for America and stuff. And this is what Liverpool do. They get into communities and they help where they can, as well as obviously trying to be the best football club that they are. And it's so nice to see that they care genuinely about things that are happening that are wrong, and that things that they can, you know, they genuinely make a difference, can't they?
That's a good thing about, you know, Scousers as well, whether you're blue or red, they help each other out, you know. Like home bait, amazing bakery. You know, a lot of people just think it's just a bakery, but no, you know, they help with housing, which is amazing. And, you know, the food banks, to me, you know, especially this day and age as well, with the pandemic as well, there's a lot of people out of work, you know, that need help. So I think the club does, you know, a great honour with helping the community. And, you know, Peter, like, when I first saw the PowerPoint, I was like, what's going on here? Because I thought he was just going to, you know, tell stories. And then within 5 minutes, I was glued, you know, to watching it. And I was just like, you know, because there's stuff I never knew about. So I was like, I came away just going, that's great. You know, it made me feel more like the club was part of me, you know. And I think Steve's the same way.
Oh yeah, if I would have known it was an actual PowerPoint with statistics, I probably wouldn't have had that last beer right before he started it, because I
think I've got photographs of some of them PowerPoints. I'm sure I remember squinting through what I, because I was having a beer with John Gibbons and Andy Heaton from the Anfield Rap, and Aubrey obviously used to Redmen with us, and I'm sure we were taking sly little photos of it, like, oh, we'll use this in content. But I think I got too pissed and forgot about them, to be honest with you.
Hey, I wanted to ask you,
Gibbo drinks a lot of beer, like.
That's right. Hey, I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned the Anfield Rap. I know you guys have really, in some of the trips, you've kind of become, you know, part of the trip with them. And can you kind of go over how that happened? That, you know, when they were when they come to the States, you're kind of doing the same shows.
Yeah. So when we did the California one a couple of years ago, was that 2016? Something
2016.
Like that. Yeah. They asked us if we wanted to be involved, and we're like, yeah, absolutely. Like, love it. Love the lads and the women there as well. I think they do a fantastic job of, you know, being inclusive and making people feel like they've got a voice and stuff. I love the Anfield Rap. I don't listen to it anymore. And I tell them this is because I feel like if I listen to a Liverpool podcast, I don't want to repeat it and pretend it's my views. I'd rather, like, I'd just try and watch the footy and give my views, formulate my own opinions. So I stop listening to it, but I don't love it any less. It's just, I'd find myself saying something like, did I hear that on the Anfield Rap? Is that fair? Is that allowed? And I just never, morally, I just didn't want to go there. I was like, I'll just stop listening. But I love what they do. I really do. And, you know, they're good friends of ours. And yes, we are technically competitors and all that type of stuff. This is football, man. It's just a hobby still at the end of the day. So it's all cool. Like,
yeah, that's what.
Yeah,
that's,
it seems like you have your own niches, right?
I think so. Yeah,
that's what I love, though. You know, there probably is that, you know, little competitive like underneath, but your mates. Yeah, you know, I think a lot of like, especially over here, kind of there's competition where there shouldn't be. You know, trying to one up each other, but we all support this great team. You know. That we should help each other out no matter what, you know, at the end of
that's
the day.
That's it. People always say to, would you do this podcast? Like this, for example, we do this podcast. Well, yeah, absolutely. Why wouldn't I? I want to talk about Liverpool. I always talk about Liverpool. I still want to talk about Liverpool. It's just great. And I said at the top of the show, I like hearing other people's opinions. I like, you know, understanding things from different perspectives. You can't get that if you talk to the same two people every day. And you watch from your viewpoint. So you watch the game, and then I'll go home and I'll watch the game from the telly point of view, try and get that point of view, talk to different people. You know, no one's right, isn't it? You can't be right when you're talking about football. It's all it is a game of opinions, isn't it? You know, and yeah, I think the Anfield Index do a great job as well. There's just so many now that make great content. We're fortunate, I think, because I think Liverpool's, again, different to everybody else, because we've got more great content than any other football club. More, you know, even just like think about T-shirts and stuff like that. I mean, there's just so many great designs from great people, just creators, and it's all around this club that we love. It's incredible, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I don't have enough money to buy all these T-shirts. It's like every day somebody's bringing out a new T-shirt. I'm like, I want that, but you know, the missus is like, no. She's like, you've got the trainers. You're not getting all the damn T-shirts.
Yeah, I can see you've got the trainers, like, bloody hell.
I want to ask you, Cop Connect.
Yeah.
You lads are going to be going over in June. How did that come about?
I've no idea, genuinely.
Because
I think Chris heard that we're going.
Yeah.
Now he wants to go. That's what
happened. That's probably it now.
Yeah, I know Mark Kenny. Musician, and then Alex Malone and Danny Greenwood. When Mark told me you lads were coming, I was like, oh man, that's brilliant, because you know they've got Phil Tomo coming, Roy Evans, Bruce Grabelaar, and then I forget the fourth one. But I mean,
this is all news to me, by the way.
Wow. Maybe they've put you in the basement.
Yeah, that's probably it. No, so we were scheduled to do it last summer. And yeah. they said to us, I think they be honest, they've been in touch with Paul. So he's organised it all, and he said, are you still up for it next year? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely, of course I am. Like, so I don't know any more than that. He probably knows all that, and I'll probably get a phone call about a week before and say, come on, pack your bags, Chris, and I'll have to turn around to the wife and go, so I'm going to go to America in a week's time. Is that okay?
Well, you're not just going to America, you're going to Vegas.
I know. Yeah, I know. I was. It's one of the. Like, there was a couple of things over lockdown. First of all, seeing Liverpool lift the Premier League trophy obviously was the biggest loss. I also had tickets to go and see Rage Against the Machine for the first time live. So I missed out on them. So I was absolutely furious about that. And the third one was going to Vegas for Cop Connect. They were the three things that I was most disgruntled about, shall we say, with the pandemic.
You know, Chris, we could do like we in Boston. You won't even need a room in Vegas. You just drink all night and we can just party all through the night because, you know, they pump the oxygen inside. So you don't even know what time of day it is in there.
Yeah, but you've also seen me, Steve, and you'll know that I'll need a bed somewhere when I pass out drunk.
That's right.
Yeah, you don't want to pass out by the pool. Not you, anyway. No. Not with that white skin.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Chris, I want to ask you because, you know, speaking of Vegas, and Vegas is one of the like culinary capitals of the world, and you're quite, I see quite a few of your videos online about cooking. So, and my son right now, he's going through this phase where every day there's another $200, and Daz is a chef too, by the way, but uh-huh. My son will see like another $200 knife, and we have two smokers now. And in, yesterday, wow. Going to the grocery store, he gets a tomahawk steak, and I'm thinking it's like 10 bucks, and next thing is $40. I'm like, dude. And so he's going through this cooking phase, and I know that, you know, that's something that's near and dear to your heart, and kind of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk about that a little bit.
I love it, mate. I started off washing dishes in a restaurant on the Five Ways in Chilwell in Liverpool when I was 15 years old and caught the bug, to be honest with you. And, you know, a couple of years later, they promoted me to like a commis chef and then chef de partie and all that type of stuff. And then I got out of the kitchen. Actually, and there was a couple more restaurants I was a chef in as well. Went sort of front of house, and because I just thought it was easier, to be perfectly honest with you. Never stopped loving the cooking, but fuck me, the chefs don't half work bad hours. So it was much easier front of house as well. And you got to see more women, which was always a nice thing. So I absolutely love it, and I love all of it. Like, you know, I'm a proper little nerd on it and stuff. I've got like Damascus steel knives and all that type of stuff, copper pans. I mean, I just, yeah, all the gear and no idea, I think you'd probably say. But no, I absolutely love it. Like,
that's crazy, because I'm a chef by trade as well. You know, I went to culinary school. I was in the Navy and did school in there as well. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's like Liverpool's first, the passion, and then second is cooking. So, you know, I grew up with my grandmother, you know, just the smells in the kitchen. I wanted to know, like, you know, how do you get that smell? And then, you know, she would teach me. And then after school, I went to culinary school. So, yeah. That's a passion of mine as well. Well, eating is a passion.
Yeah, eating. I mean, everyone can tell looking at me that eating's a passion of mine. Like, my problem is I don't know when to stop. But, no, I think when you think about it, I mean, what I love about it, and I'm sure you guys will feel the same, and it's that family time. It's like creating something that you can all enjoy together. And, you know, I was always brought up to sit around the table and eat dinner with my family. And, you know, it's something that we always did. We never really do and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this, but as in our family, we never eat our dinner on our laps in front of the television. We spoke about our day and we talked it through, and that's just a big thing. And I still, you know, I had my mum and dad over for dinner at the weekend, cooked a big dinner for everybody, wanted everyone to be together. It's just good family time, isn't it? And I think that's what's at the heart of it, really, creating something, putting your time and your love and your effort into doing something nice for the people who are nearest and dearest, I suppose.
Even my 5-year-old though will go, what's this crap? I'm like, thanks a lot. It took like an hour and a half to make it, but thanks. No, but it is like, you know, I miss, you know, being back home and having going to the pub for the Sunday roast with your whole family, and everybody just talks about the week, because I think it's kind of been lost a little bit. You know, most people just let their kids sit in front of the telly, eat, you know, and there's no connection. But bringing the pandemic back, you know, everybody having to stay home, I think it's really like helped families, and communities as well, because, you know, finally we're back to like talking to one another again, you know. And, you know, I can watch like the footy with me missus, but still the missus is like, well, what's offside mean and what's this mean? But, you know, I'd never used to do that. Now I can have a conversation with her.
Yeah, and that's right. Yeah. That is absolutely right. I mean, we spend a lot more time, you know, ball games now with the kids. So they're getting old enough that they can do that now. And a lot of Uno and all these little ball games that you can do as a family around the dinner table. I love listening to music, like, you know, footy, music, food. They're my three passions type of thing. And I've got a record player in the dining room, put the LPs on the turntable and you know, listen to some real good music and listen to an album as well. When was the last time you just listened to an album? I'll go in there and I'll just put an album on and just listen to it, not with my phone, none of this, just be in the moment and enjoy that, you know. These are things that people used to do all the time, and I think now, for me certainly, music's become a very insular thing. When I was growing up, we used to go around to people's houses and you'd take turns in putting songs on or CDs in or whatever it was. Now you put a pair of headphones and you walk down the street. Like, I don't know what like music my best mate likes anymore, because you don't share those experiences together. But music is supposed to be fucking shared together, like the enjoyment of football and all this stuff that we're talking about. We're better, as Steve said earlier, we're sociable creatures. We're better when this is the type of thing that we do. And music, food, footy, it's all at the heart of that, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe you should bring back the big box on your shoulder and walk down the street of Liverpool.
The boom box.
I'd love that.
With the linoleum. I used to have all that, but I couldn't break dance worth shit. But I had all the gear. I even had the Sherlock Holmes hat.
Did you, yeah?
Yeah, with me Sergio Tacchini. Pants.
Nice.
I look the part.
Yeah.
But that's always good. Looking the part is the first part. But yeah.
It's half of the battle.
But it's just going down like to your local record store, you know, and getting that 45 single that, you know, you've been waiting for. You know, your mum and dad gave you, you know, your little, you know, couple of quid, and you'd run down there at the weekend with your mates. And you'd be like, I got it. Then you go home to, you know, whoever had the record player at the time. And you just listen to music all day. I miss that, you know, because I DJ as well, like house music. So I love that. Yeah, I know. I'm into everything.
I can tell, yeah.
But just you know, the smell of vinyl. The hiss of vinyl when you put it on the needle, I love it. And a lot of people have kind of, you know, obviously gone away from that, and I call them like zombies, because it's just put the headphones on, bam, you're in your own little world,
and it's mad,
it's kind of lost, you know.
I remember, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just saying, when I went over to San Francisco for the tour, I was listening to a record by a band. Oh, it doesn't matter. They died in a car accident, and I was listening to it on the train. And I'm fine with that. But as soon as I get into a city, I want to feel the city. I want to hear the sounds of the city. You know what I mean? So the headphones, if I'm in somewhere new, the headphones come out, because you want a vibe of a place, don't you? You know, and you put your headphones in and you just listen to your music. You're not taking in. Like, I was in San Francisco for about 8 hours, just looking around, looking up at the buildings, hearing the sounds, hearing the people talking. It's all part of the experience, isn't it? And the vinyl thing, I'm new to the vinyl, like the last year, because I started to sort of really get really pissed off with like Spotify and stuff, to be honest with you. Because I realised that, generally speaking, I like the same sort of albums as I've always liked. And I realised, when am I ever going to stop paying Spotify? £10 a month forever to listen to the same 15 to 20 albums that I had on CD. So I just went out and bought a load of vinyl and won it, and just went, you know what, I'm sacking this off. I'm going to create my own. I'll get a NAS drive. I'll put my music on my NAS drive. So when I'm out and about, I can stream my music from my own NAS drive that I own. I can give the bands the money rather than this 0.02 of a penny for every stream or whatever it is. Give them the money, buy the vinyl, support the artists, and sort of support creators in that way.
Yeah, I don't know if you recall, Chris, at that in Boston at that hotel that you came in and, you know, had a couple of beers with us at the end of the night, but that hotel is called The Verb. So in each room, they had a record player. And then when you made your reservations, you told them what kind of music you'd like. So in your room had three three albums that kind of pertain to the type of music. It was brilliant. So every room had its own, you know, record player, and then you can go down and change out the albums, you know, when you wanted to. And it, I was like, now what a great concept, because, you know, being grown up from that area and not, I mean, our kids don't know what an album is. I mean, mine don't. So it, I thought, it was, you know, that was such a brilliant marketing thing to have them.
That's genius, that, isn't it? So where was this hotel? Is this the one where we went to and they had no beer and we left?
Yes. So this was right next to the stadium. Well, we drank all the beer. We didn't know you were coming. Otherwise, we would have been prepared.
So I remember, I have a vague recollection of being very drunk in the back of a cab and getting to someone's hotel because they promised us beer, and then you drank all the beer, so we got back in the cab.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, we were looking for bottles of wine. We were, you know, rubbing alcohol. We were looking for everything, I remember, at that point in the night. Mouthwash, it didn't matter.
Yeah, vague recollection of that. In fact, I think four of us squeezed onto the back seat of our cab, and then we were all so drunk that we turned around and went, we were like, one of them sat on someone's knee, and we turned around and there was no one in the front seat. We'd all crammed into the back and like sitting on each other's knees, and there was an empty seat in the front, and we were like, ah, shit, we're too drunk here.
Good times. And, you know, we're going to have the Anfield Rap here this past spring. And, you know, obviously that got canceled, but they have promised to come back, you know, when everything is good. So we hope that you'll be making a trip to Austin, especially, you know, you like music. Austin's known for its music scene. And so we hope that you can make the trip over here, you know, eventually and come visit and
come visit us.
Come see us before you go to Vegas.
Yeah. How far away is it?
Like a couple of hours.
It's miles away, isn't it?
It is, but, you know, a flight. Yeah. Flight maybe. Is, what, 2 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're pretty cheap flights.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah. And okay. I don't think Vegas will ever run out of beer.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. Although, they haven't had 40,000 Liverpool fans to send on it before, so maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Hey, Chris, as we wind down, just taking it back to the club, what are your expectations for this season? And do you see... you know, it can't be 18 points again, right? The gap can't be 18 points, you wouldn't think, at the end of this season.
I don't know. I think Liverpool win the league. I think that we're in a really good position, aren't we? Because obviously the games are going to be coming thick and fast, obviously two games a week and all that. But, you know, we've got a good squad. We've got, for the most part, they're fully integrated. Like we were talking about, they know the system and the world-class players. But also, you know, you think of Manchester United and Manchester City, they've had 31 days in between seasons here. And their season ran long, and this is going into a heavy season for them. I just don't see that they're going to be physically at their peak, and if they're physically not at the peak, I don't think mentally they'll be at the peak as well. So I think they're going to have a little bit of a struggle again. And I think as well, you know, people are obviously looking back at what happened post restart and looking at the results that Liverpool got, and, you know, the 15 goals conceded in 8 games prior to Chelsea and all that type of stuff. But Liverpool were as rested as we've ever been. You know, Mo Salah, Sadio Mane, all those types of players, they've not had breaks in 2 years. And we had a good 3-month period during lockdown where we rested, and we didn't really put ourselves under too much strain for the next 2 months to finish the season. So I think we'll be as fit and as fast and raring to go as ever this season, and better rested than any of the other top teams. And when you couple that with world-class players, the best manager in world football, I see that it's a big gap again. Maybe it's not 18. I think 15 to 20, though, I could genuinely see it. And I think it's between us and Bayern Munich for the Champions League as well while we're at it. And why not? Let's get the Capital One Cup or whatever it's called.
FA Cup for me. I'd like to get back to Wembley and win that, you know. I'd like to win it all. Sod it. Let's just do it. But I like what Lizzie Doyle said too. She was like, if we're above Man City, we've won the league.
Yeah.
I don't see anybody else really, like, you know, challenging. United, wow, they looked woeful. You know, it's just that, you know, like, watching Liverpool, you know, a few seasons ago, we were amazing in attack and we were shite at the back. Now we've got that balance, you know, where the defence is great, you know, midfield's fantastic, and the front three are just world class. So, yeah, long may it rain You know, I think a dynasty is happening.
I hope so.
And then, well, Arsenal next Monday.
Yeah, we'll stuff them.
Yeah, it's about time. You know, we wipe the little smirk off Arteta's face, or maybe some of the black dye off his hair. Chris,
I mean, if you look at the top six, you know, most of them had deficiencies in their back, right? And you don't see any of them have really addressed them. So whether they score 100 goals like Chelsea wants to do, you still have the defense that is not going to carry you through a long and tough season.
Absolutely.
Well, hopefully, Chris, you know, when this horrible pandemic like finishes, you know, I know me and Steve will be on the first plane, you know, back to Liverpool. So hopefully we'll all get together and hopefully celebrate, you know, the first of many titles.
Absolutely. Well, listen, obviously I've got you on Twitter and stuff now, but feel free if you're ever over in Liverpool to reach out and we'll go for a pint, certainly.
Well, not for a pint, for a few.
You know the vernacular, though. A pint in Liverpool's we're out all night.
Well, now that you've been on the show, I don't have to stalk you anymore, Chris, so appreciate you coming out here. I know, honestly. But honestly, when Daz and I, we kind of converted to this format, having guests on there, and I told him straight away, I was like, we got to get Chris on there, you know, just the history that we have together, but just the enjoyment that you bring, not to just me and him on a weekly basis, but, you know, to everybody around the world, you know, people look for you and love seeing the interviews right after the game, just the passion that you bring and kind of living vicariously through you being there right on the grounds. And so keep up the good work, man. We appreciate you joining us today.
Well, I actually wanted to thank Jeff Golden, because he's the one that, you know, got me in touch with Chris, because I'd actually sent a bunch of emails and you bastards never sent anything back.
Where to?
The Red Men TV. I was on redmentv.com and I'd sent a bunch of emails, you know, saying, I said, we really want you on. And then, you know, thank goodness we befriended Jeff. Stalked Jeff. We stalk everyone. Well, Steve does.
That's right. I thought it was because I sent one of those pictures to him and I said, hey, I have more of these pictures. If you don't come on the show, I'm releasing them.
Now, gents, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking footy with you. No, it's been brilliant. Thank you for the kind words as well, Steve. That means a lot, mate. Yeah, it really does. I mean, you know, I said at the top, I enjoy what I do, and if people get enjoyment from it, it really does mean the world. Like, the, you know, people coming up to me and saying, like, just love that and love the passion and all that. It honestly means a hell of a lot. Like,
yeah, it's good to catch up with you too, Chris, man. Yeah, I can't wait to have a couple beers with you soon.
Yeah, absolutely, mate, absolutely.
Well, thank you, Chris. Hopefully, you know, stay in touch. You know, maybe one of these days get Paul on as well, get his opinions and, you know, see if he's an alcoholic as well.
He's not.
He's not?
He's got other vices, though. I'm not allowed to say what they are.
Oh, uh-oh. That's probably a show in itself. Well, really appreciate it, and I guess enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Take it easy. Say hello to Simon for me.
Yeah, we will.
Cheers.
Cheers, Chris.
Cheers, James. Thank you. Cheers.
All right. Thank you, Chris from Red Men TV. Please check Red Men TV out. It's a fantastic podcast, fantastic shows on YouTube as well. Two great lads that absolutely love Liverpool Football Club. So really appreciate Chris coming on. I'll just do a quick one, because, you know, we've got the next one coming up in about 10 minutes.
Yeah. Just a disclaimer to all our subscribers. We don't drink beer 24/7, just to let you know.
And Steve is not a stalker. But check us out, atxreds.com, our YouTube channel at the Liverpool Connection Podcast, Twitter at atxredspodcast, Yeah, and that's about it. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk soon. Cheers.
Cheers.